On January 11, 2005, an Indigenous farmer was killed and 20 others seriously injured at a protest against Canadian mining operations in Sipacapa, Guatemala. This confrontation took place after months of protest by villagers against the construction of the Marlin Mine, an open-pit gold mine owned by the Canadian firm Glamis Gold in the heart of Guatemala's highlands. Since that time, Indigenous activists in Guatemala have been actively resisting the construction of the mine, despite continued violence and intimidation from Glamis's security forces and by the Guatemalan military. Juan Tima, a Mayan community leader from Sipacaba, recently toured the Atlantic Canadian provinces speaking about the impact of Canadian mining companies in his community. The tour was organized by the Maritimes Breaking the Silence Network, an Atlantic Canadian solidarity network, and was conducted in the run-up to solidarity actions planned at the Glamis Gold shareholder meeting in Toronto in early May. In this CKDU broadcast, Tima speaks about the effects of mining within Sipacapa, the consistent culpability of the Canadian government in these effects, and the need for Canadian solidarity.
A lot of people call it sort of a neo-colonialist attack on other countries, where richer countries get wealthy off of the backs of poorer countries. In this case, Canada, Glamis Gold on the backs of Guatemalans in communities like Sipacapa, which is where Juan Tima comes from. So I also wanted to just say a little bit the context of Glamis Gold is that right now in the world we're seeing increased neoliberalization and a lot of free trade agreements that are being negotiated, often without the consent of the community members involved. So we're seeing things like the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which is an agreement between Central American countries and the United States. We're seeing things which is very similar to NAFTA, and how NAFTA liberalized Mexico. It's going to do the same with Central America. And then there's the Central American Four Free Trade Agreement, which is a Canadian agreement with Central America that not a lot of us know about because it's under wraps, and in fact no official draft has ever been given. In fact, the government continues to refuse to release the draft despite NGO pressure and calls from people in Central America saying that they should have the right to know what is being planned for their country, because ultimately when you liberalize trade, it's always at the expense of human rights and social services, and that of course affects the poor. So over the past few years, Glamis Gold has been making significant profits for its shareholders, and basically that comes from the line of open pit cyanide leaching mining operations that are going on all over the place. Guatemala and Honduras are just two examples. And basically it's at the expense of human rights and environmental degradation. So in terms of Breaking the Silence's relationship with Guatemalan groups working against mining, we've had a lot of experience with people, our counterparts that we've been working with through the years. We had a visit from a man named Filochefo, that's his nickname, or pen name, José Manuel Chacón. He comes from an organization called Madre Selva, which does environmental and social justice work all over Guatemala, and so is obviously very interested in the environmental and human impacts of mining, and has worked to a great extent with members of the community of Sipacapa, near where the Glamis Gold mine is. We also do a lot of work on advocacy, political advocacy, and working with our MPs to put pressure on the government. A really good example is the Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs came out with a report in June of 2005, basically talking about how the Canadian government needs to take more responsibility in educating and controlling or monitoring the actions of Canadian companies overseas, basically putting into question a lot of the mining companies and other organizations, corporations that are working and that have that may have ethical frameworks but often don't follow them. And so we've also sent a delegation to the mine in Sipacapa in San Marcos, and people were able to go and meet with community members, community activists, church groups, and other political leaders and community activists ultimately, just to figure out what was going on, to learn more about the situation, and to figure out what we as Canadians could be doing, because a lot of us didn't know what was going on in Guatemala. And so this last piece that we're doing here, among other things, this last piece is part of the ongoing campaign, anti-mining campaign, that we've been involved with, and it's being organized primarily by Rights Action, which is an organization that has offices in Canada, the States, and Guatemala, and works in several countries. And they obviously have brought Juan Tema and another man from Honduras, another from another mining community, to Canada for the Glamis Gold stakeholders meeting, which is happening May 3rd in Toronto. So there's going to be a protest that happens outside of that, and then a declaration, which we'll talk about a little bit later, which will be handed to that meeting, and Juan and his counterpart will have an opportunity to bring the views of his community to that stakeholders meeting. So it's very exciting. The last thing I just wanted to say before I hand it over has to do with the Canadian Pension Plan, CPP, and how it's actually a huge, huge investor in Glamis. I've got the numbers here, the scary, scary numbers. The CPP currently holds 1,826,000 shares in Glamis Gold, valued at $34,287,000. It also has 2,741,000 shares in INCO, which is worth $131,663,000. I mean, the CCP is also investing in many other things, like genetically modified foods, world-leading weapons manufacturers. The list goes on. Ultimately, things that affect human lives and human rights and the environment. And that's where my money goes every time I get a paycheck. So this is just one way that we're intrinsically linked, and just another example of the negative impacts of these kind of corporate-led decisions and workings.
Mi nombre es Juan Tema. Vengo de un pueblo muy pequeño en el occidente de la República de Guatemala. Se llama Sipacapa.
My name is Juan Tema. I come from a very small community in the western part of Guatemala called Sipacapa.
Somos un pueblo de ascendencia maya y somos el 100% indígenas los que vivimos en Sipacapa.
We are from a community that is, we're from Mayan origins and disculpa el porcentaje, 100%. Sí. 100% Sipacapen. Indígenas, sorry.
Mi pueblo tiene una historia muy larga, son miles de años de historia y trae todo un proceso de desarrollo propio y una cosmovisión hacia la vida también propio, hasta que surge un fenómeno social y produce efectos catastróficos en el proceso de desarrollo de mi pueblo.
Mi pueblo tiene una historia. Oh, sorry. Got it in there. My town has a very long history. It has a history of a thousand years or thousands of years, and it has its own development process until a specific social process has developed that has catastrophic consequences.
Bueno, tal vez me refiero un poquito durante, digamos, 500 años de resistencia de los pueblos indígenas en Guatemala. Desde ese tiempo hasta ahora nos han venido tratando como que si no fuéramos seres humanos.
I'm going to refer a little bit to the 500 years of resistance in my country, and until now, and continuing today, they haven't treated us like people.
Han habido muchos programas en Guatemala específicamente, y especialmente para los pueblos indígenas, en donde nos han regalado supuestamente vitaminas, pero en realidad han estado dando anticonceptivos a las mujeres con el propósito de eliminarlas.
For example, there's been many programs in Guatemala, especially in the indigenous communities, where they give, for example, vitamins in the communities, and specifically to the women, they've been giving anticonceptive drugs in a way of eliminating the communities.
Pues han cambiado la forma de pensar. Han hecho un trabajo muy fuerte para que los pueblos indígenas sistemáticamente vayan perdiendo su identidad, sus formas propias de vivir y su cosmovisión hacia la vida.
They've worked really hard to change the way of thinking, and specifically they've worked really hard to deconstruct the identity as well as the cosmovision Maya that has existed.
Pues ahora en la actualidad estamos sufriendo lo mismo. Las políticas impositivas de nuestro gobierno están causando serios problemas en mi país.
In actuality, it's continuing and they're suffering the same way. Specifically, the position of the government now, currently in Guatemala, is having serious consequences.
Mientras en una región del mundo haya desigualdad, haya injusticia, no se va a poder conseguir la paz jamás.
And so while in any part of the world there exists poverty or inequality or injustice, there will never be peace in the world.
Hoy, por ejemplo, mi pequeño pueblo que compone apenas 14,000 personas, en donde hay un alto grado de analfabetismo, está enfrentando las consecuencias de una nueva medida impositiva que el gobierno lo está impulsando.
Today, something serious is happening in my community, a community that has less than 14,000 people, a community where there's a huge level of illiteracy. The government and what is happening today is having huge consequences.
Hay acuerdos internacionales donde los países se han reunido y han puesto en la mesa de discusión toda la injusticia que se ha venido dando en el mundo, y se han creado leyes para combatirlas, digamos, pero ni una de esas se ha cumplido.
So there are many international agreements and tables and places where all these issues of injustice have been put on the table, and there are actually laws that are in place to stop these things, but none of these laws are being completed at this moment.
cuando no estamos en un lugar viviendo en carne propia los impactos sociales, culturales, económicas, muchas veces no creemos lo que en realidad sucede en muchas regiones del mundo.
When we are not in the place living something every day or in the reality in that moment, we often don't recognize or we can't see the impacts, social impacts, the cultural impacts, the economic impacts. We often don't believe what is happening.
Un proyecto que se impone en una comunidad que supuestamente es para el desarrollo, pero si no es consultada, no es discutido ampliamente con las comunidades, provoca impactos sociales muy graves.
A project that is imposed, that is supposedly for development, but that is not consulted, the community is not consulted, there is no open discussion, and it is completely forced on the community.
Pues hoy nosotros estamos enfrentando ese problema. Una empresa minera denominado Proyecto Marlin de Montana Exploradora de Guatemala, subsidiaria de la Glamis Gold, aparece en nuestro pueblo. Tan de repente.
Today we are experiencing this. This is what is happening. A mining company that's called Marlin Exploradora de Guatemala, which is a subsidiary of Glamis Gold, a Canadian mining company, suddenly appears in our community. They repent out of nowhere.
Nos dicen que nos traen el desarrollo. Pero cuando hacemos una pregunta sobre cuáles son sus impactos, porque sabemos que cualquier acción del hombre tiene impactos positivos y también tiene impactos negativos. Y si preguntamos eso, la respuesta que se nos da es que porque somos indígenas no entendemos ese proceso y no estamos en capacidad de discutirlas.
They're telling us that they're bringing us development, but when we ask the question about the impacts, because we know every act of man has an impact, whether it's positive or negative, the response to us is that we're indigenous, and that we don't understand what's happening, and we're not capable of making our own decisions.
Bueno, yo les pongo a su reflexión, porque ustedes también pueden darse cuenta si hay desarrollo en un proyecto en donde van a destruir grandes extensiones de bosques, ponen en peligro los recursos naturales como el agua, ponen en peligro la pureza del aire. En una región tan pequeña, en donde no hay sistemas de agua como las que hay acá, por ejemplo.
I want to propose to you a reflection. If there is development in a project where they're going to destroy thousands of acres of forest, where they're going to put in danger the water as well as the purity of the air, and specifically in a region that's so small, where there isn't, there aren't systems of water like there are here.
Pues todas estas cosas nos preocupa. Consideramos que la resistencia que estamos haciendo en Zipacapa, con referencia a este tipo de proyectos, no nos preocupa solo Zipacapa. Nos preocupa el medio ambiente en general. El calentamiento global nos afecta a todos. Los equilibrios ecológicos nos afecta a todos. La destrucción de los ecosistemas, todos estamos involucrados ahí, independientemente estemos donde estemos.
So we are worried. A resistance that we are undertaking in Zipacapa isn't just for us. And it's not just for Zipacapa. We are worried about the environment in general. Specifically, for example, global warming also affects us. We are worried about the equilibrium of the ecology. We are worried about all the ecosystems because we are all part of them.
Utilizar 250,000 litros de agua en una hora, que hacen millones de litros en un día, mezclarlo con un tóxico altamente peligroso. Son 6 toneladas de cianuro las que se van a utilizar al día. Y en...
No, sí.
Y se van a depositar más de 2 millones de toneladas de rocas con muchas partículas de cianuro aún. Dejarlos en el ambiente es altamente peligroso.
So, what's going to happen is they're going to use 150,000 liters of water per hour. Oh, 250,000, sorry, per hour. And at the same time, they're going to mix that with a toxic chemical that's basically incredibly dangerous. And I didn't catch the entire day figure, sorry about that, of how much water is going to be used. And then basically what they're going to do is to deposit 2 million rocks or tons of rocks that have been processed with cyanide into the environment. And just putting that into the environment itself is very dangerous without thinking about further consequences.
Hacer todo eso, poner en peligro la vida de cientos de miles de personas solo por el oro, a nosotros nos dicen que somos ignorantes, pero hacer una reflexión sobre cuál es más importante para la vida, el oro o el agua, no creemos que es cosa de ignorancia.
So they're going to affect hundreds of millions of people's lives for gold. And they tell us that we're ignorant. But we say, what's more important, water or gold? And so who's the one who's being ignorant now?
En diferentes partes del mundo hay proyectos mineros. Y también hay muchos problemas muy lamentables que se han dado, y hay muchos países que han adoptado medidas de seguridad. Aquí mismo en Canadá hay disposiciones legales que ya no permiten el uso del cianuro. ¿Por qué? Porque es altamente peligroso. En los Estados Unidos igual. En Europa hay propuestas muy fuertes de muchos gobiernos sobre el uso del cianuro en los proyectos mineros. Pero en Guatemala se puede utilizar de todo.
There are mining projects throughout the world. And specifically there's projects in countries that have taken basically security measures or health protection measures. Specifically in Canada, they're not allowed to use cyanide in the process of processing gold. In the States, equally. In Europe, there are strong proposals about or positions around the use of cyanide. But in Guatemala, they can use everything.
En estos tiempos, el hombre está padeciendo de una de las enfermedades más peligrosas, socialmente hablando. Se llama avaricia e ambición. Y esto nos está arrastrando cada vez más cerca de la autodestrucción.
In this time of humanity, there are several diseases that are infecting us or becoming plagues. One is greed, the other is ambition. And we're getting very, very close to self-destruction.
Pues la avaricia nos hace perder la capacidad de darnos cuenta quiénes somos y qué posibilidades tenemos de seguir viviendo. Y también nos hace olvidar el sufrimiento de otros. Porque este tipo de proyectos lleva mucha prosperidad a unos pocos y hace sufrir a muchas más personas alrededor del mundo.
Greed makes us forget or lose who we are, and specifically what possibilities we have to continue to live or the ways of making that happen. It also makes us not able to see or forget about the suffering of others. Specifically, projects like this make very few people very, very rich, while affecting many people in a very negative way.
Para poder hacer cambiar, contribuir, para que cambie todo esto y pensar en un mundo con más, un mundo más justo, promover la igualdad, no basta con tener compasión de los que lo están sufriendo. Se requiere de acciones.
But I can, to change this or contribute to this, to change who we are, where we're going, to think about to dream about a better world. It's not just enough to have compassion. It requires action.
Pues nosotros no estamos en contra de este tipo de trabajos, ni mucho menos en contra de las personas que trabajan en este proyecto, ¿no? A nosotros nos preocupa que la injusticia y la represión y el sufrimiento de miles de personas se sigue dando ya en estos tiempos en que estamos viviendo.
We are not against work or projects like this in themselves, nor not even the people that work there. But what does concern us and worry us is the type of repression that is occurring, specifically even in these times, supposedly in peace, around people who are working against these issues.
Y por eso es que yo agradezco a las personas que organizan este tipo de eventos y a ustedes que están presentes acá, porque es importante que conozcamos estas realidades.
And this is the reason why I thank people who have organized events like this and those of you who are present here, because it is important that we also learn about these things that are happening in the world.
Relatarles todo lo que sucede en torno a un proyecto minero, sus efectos, sus impactos sociales, culturales, cómo se promueve la desigualdad, cómo es que empiece a nacer la confrontación, el rompimiento de los tejidos sociales de las comunidades, me llevaría mucho tiempo.
To be able to tell you everything that happens in a mining project, specifically the social impacts, the economic impacts, the fact that it promotes inequality and that it's actually in many ways destroying the social composition of communities and creating confrontation would take me a long, long time.
Sin embargo, ustedes están cordialmente invitados. Si tuvieran la posibilidad de de visitar, aunque no sea el Zipacapa, pero en cualquier otra región donde hay un proyecto minero, platicaran con las personas, le preguntaran qué sienten ellos, cómo está cambiando sus vidas. Hay cosas que a veces ni siquiera se creen que están sucediendo, pero tristemente sí suceden.
Even so, you are invited, even if you have the possibility to visit a mining community anywhere in the world, and to ask the people living there how they are, how they're being impacted, and maybe even ask them questions that they're not aware, or ask them about things that maybe they're not realizing that's happening, and just listen to their stories.
Hay muchas personas que no saben esto. Hay personas que están involucradas de alguna forma y no lo saben. Los inversionistas, por ejemplo, de la Glamis Gold, yo no creo que ellos sepan con detalle lo que sucede como efecto de las inversiones que ellos hacen. Yo digo que si voy a tener la oportunidad de platicar con algún inversionista de la Glamis Gold, lo voy a invitar a que vaya a vivir a Zipacapa por lo menos un año. Y se va a dar cuenta de los problemas que esto produce.
And many people don't know this, and many people who are involved actually don't probably know completely what is happening, specifically like shareholders in Glamis Gold. They probably really aren't aware of all the impacts, and as we found out earlier tonight, we all in some way are investors in Glamis Gold, of what is happening. And so if I do get the chance to meet a shareholder of Glamis Gold, what I'll do is I'll invite them to come and live in Zipacapa for a year. And then they'll see.
Es increíble aceptar que una empresa transnacional que se origina, digamos, en uno de los países más desarrollados y del primer mundo, digamos, no sepan respetar, digamos, principalmente las leyes que hablan sobre los derechos humanos. Parece ser increíble, pero sí se hace.
It's incredible to... It's unacceptable that a transnational corporation that comes from a country that's one of the countries most developed in the world, that they don't know how to respect the leyes that are there to protect human rights.
En Guatemala y en otros países latinoamericanos, casi en la mayoría hay mucha pobreza. Pero la pobreza es solo un efecto de la corrupción. Y la corrupción se ha promovido por las políticas impositivas de los gobiernos norteamericanos y especialmente el Banco Mundial.
In Guatemala and other countries in Latin America, there's a lot of poverty. And poverty is an effect of corruption. And specifically, corruption has been put in place or by the, I guess, looking for the word, by the actions or the politics or the policies of the U.S. government and the World Bank, for example.
Empieza, digamos, con los presidentes y termina con las autoridades comunitarias. Y esto produce efectos muy lamentables. Pero yo creo que como ciudadanos podemos nosotros contribuir para que estas cosas cambien. Yo los invito para que todos podamos hacer algo al respecto. No importa que estemos en Guatemala o estemos en cualquier país, Todos somos seres humanos y todos tenemos un compromiso con todos y con nosotros mismos. Muchas gracias.
So the corruption starts with the presidents, and it goes down to the local authorities, and this has effects, really negative effects and really sad effects. But as citizens, we can contribute so that we can change, and specifically that I invite all of you, because we are all citizens of the world, and we all have the responsibility, and we all have the ability to take some type of action, to take issue with this, and thank you. And Juan says, I think Blake's going to say this as well, that if you guys have any questions, because we did kind of jump around specifically, that he's more than willing to answer any questions. And for me as a translator, I would love it if you'd make your questions short and clear. And
I'm just wondering if Juan could talk a little more about the international covenants that govern the issue of consultation in indigenous communities and how they were violated by Gladys.
So Anne's question is asking Juan to talk about the international covenants that exist around specifically indigenous rights to land and how they were violated even in the face of a community consultation.
El código municipal, que es una ley dentro de la jurisdicción de, la, de las municipalidades en Guatemala, la constitución política de la República de Guatemala, la ley de consejos de desarrollo urbano y rural y el convenio 169 de la OIT exigen que se debe de consultar a las comunidades cualquier tipo de proyecto de trascendencia para ellos. En el caso específico de Zipacapa, no se hizo eso, no se consultó, no demostró voluntad ni la compañía ni el gobierno en hacer proceso de consulta.
Specifically, there's a municipal code, which is a jurisdictional law, the Constitution of Guatemala, as well as a specific law in Guatemala that's called the Law of Municipal and I guess regional councils for development, as well as at the international level the Convention 169 with the International Labor Organization, all call for the consultation of any community that, specifically indigenous community, that's going to be affected by some type of project in any meaningful way. They didn't do that at any level. They didn't even show the willingness to do that. Neither the government nor the mine, the mining company.
Solo voy a aclarar. Mm-hmm. Ante esta situación, los líderes comunitarios de Zipacapa trabajaron un proceso de consulta que fue atacada legalmente por la empresa, promoviendo recursos de amparo e incluso pidiendo sentencias inconstitucionales ante la Corte de Constitucionalidad.
And just to finish answering this question, that in this situation, because there was no consultation and no willingness to hold a consultation, the community leaders worked to create a process of consultation with the community, and specifically the mining company, Glamis or Marlin, as it's known in Guatemala, attacked this process legally through injunctions as well as going as high as to the constitutional court to question the constitutionality of the consultation that was held in Zipacapa. So just so everybody knows what the question was, she was just asking about the 1% profits and how that's divided, whether it's going to the national government or if it's divided to the community level, and what that looks like in terms of corporate social responsibility, I think. That.
El 1% sobre las ganancias netas se distribuye el 50% para el gobierno central y el 50% para la municipalidad en donde se extrae el mineral. Es una cantidad muy, muy relativamente muy poco. Y tomando en cuenta la realidad de la burocracia del gobierno de Guatemala, ese poco dinero es muy fácil que se termine entre la cuestión de la corrupción que prevalece mucho entre el oficialismo.
So the 1% of the net earnings, 50% of it will go to the central government, and the other 50% will go to the local municipality. And relatively, it's a very small amount. And specifically taking into account the amount of bureaucracy that happens in Guatemala, and specifically the aforementioned corruption, this can disappear very quickly. So I don't know if everybody heard the question, but specifically there was the first part, which was asking what has been done in Guatemala around pressuring Glamis. I think that was part of the question. And then also what is being done on the Canadian side, and specifically we know that there's shareholder activism as well as just kind of the lack of media attention here, specifically that there's no media here tonight, and what has been done. And so I think I'll ask Juan the first part because he can maybe talk to that better than I can. And then if somebody from, if Catherine, you want to speak to what's being done. Okay.
En Guatemala, yo creo que los mismos pueblos indígenas han trabajado mucho para decir al gobierno y a las compañías transnacionales que han estado violando constantemente los derechos humanos, que ya no se debe de hacer eso. Por eso es de que las compañías no necesitan consultar. En complicidad con el gobierno, porque el gobierno los apoya mucho. En este caso, Zipacapa ya les dijo a ellos que se debe de consultar.
Okay. In Guatemala specifically, the communities themselves, the indigenous communities themselves have been the ones to organize specifically, and they've worked really, really hard. And they've worked really hard to make it clear that their rights are being violated on a regular basis by these companies. In Zipacapa's case, they've said that this shouldn't be happening, and that's why they started the consultation process. And specifically, he also named the relationship between the companies and the government that is very much supporting the companies.
Y el propósito de estas actividades es, primero, socializar un poquito lo que está sucediendo. Y segundo, pedirles a ustedes su solidaridad. Y yo también les preguntaría, como ciudadanos canadienses, ¿qué podemos hacer al respecto? Todos juntos.
Vale. And so the meaning of these types of activities is to not just inform and socialize a little bit of what's happening, which is the first and foremost reason, but also secondly to ask for your solidarity, and also I ask you as Canadian citizens, what can we do all together to address this issue? And so he's kind of giving the question back as well, and I think Catherine.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to give you a bit of background on the last 2 years of work around mining in Canada, around Canadian companies operating. Glamis Gold is only one example. I literally get an email every week of an example in Honduras, in South America, in Indonesia, in the Philippines, in Papua New Guinea. This is only one example, and we've only begun as Canadians to address these issues. And in this case, the Breaking the Silence Network met with Jose Manuel Chacon 2 years ago in March. Anne was there, Maria was there, Mary was there. I'm not sure, I think Tara was there too. And maybe Heather was there, I don't know at the meeting. I think Heather was there. So a number of people in this room were at that meeting. That was 2 years ago, and that was really the first hint that we had in Canada that Canadian company, Glamis Gold, which is incidentally a head office in Reno, Nevada, with a box number in Vancouver and a lawyer in Vancouver. And we were at the mine in December, and there were no Canadians working there. There probably are a few, but we certainly didn't meet them. That we got this first clue then, and we in the Maritimes said we're going to work on this. In November, that was in March of 2004. In November 1st, some of us flew to Guatemala, mainly interns going with the CETA interns, and we went to the embassy, and the ambassador, James Lambert, proudly brought out for us the newspaper article that he'd written the day before defending Glamis Gold in the major newspaper of Guatemala. And fortunately, we realized the significance of this and found out that there was going to be a forum on mining a month later. As we were working on this in the Maritimes, bit by bit, because it's very hard to take on this, we were starting to make links with the America's Policy Group in Ottawa. And there are all kinds of people working in NGOs and solidarity groups from and First Nations groups from BC to the Maritimes working on this. And there have been for over a year. But making it, and the Ottawa Citizen, for example, had a series of excellent articles. There have been articles in the Globe and Mail. But nearly all the articles have been, with the exception of the Ottawa Citizen, have been about the incredible profits that Glamis Gold has made from this. Five times what they would ever make in a Canadian gold mining, because it's open pit mining and many other reasons. And we've been working out a lot. We visited MPs, we've written letters to the Parliamentary Committee on Mining last spring. An all-party unanimous committee wrote a report talking about the destructive impacts of mining that was published last June. In what month? November? September. The government rejected the report of the all-party committee. We've been, Jamie Neen from Mining Watch was at our meeting last year. We're working constantly. We have long conference calls. There's been lots done, as much as probably any issue, and yet it hasn't touched the media. In Fredericton, the media was invited. In St. John, the media was invited. Not one person came. I don't know about the situation here. But it's very, very hard to break through on these mining issues. And as I say, this is only one of probably 50 very serious issues around mining with Canadian companies around the world. So we're really just beginning to really take hold of something that is our responsibility. But it's not because we haven't been linking and working and writing letters. It's because it's very hard work for us as volunteers and for NGOs like Oxfam, like even Mining Watch. Jamie says, when he writes his emails, he says, whew, I'll try and take 5 minutes on this. We weren't even going to take Glamis Gold on because we've got so many others. But I'll try and take 5 minutes to work on it. This is the kind of obstacles we're up against. And it's really hard work that we need to do, but we've sure been doing our best with it, but it's hard work that we need to keep on with. And probably the next step is that even though the government rejected all the recommendations around holding Canadian companies responsible overseas for environmental destruction, they did agree to have roundtables. So there are going to be roundtables, but none in the Maritimes. And they're primarily for experts and not for us regular citizens. But we, Breaking the Silence Network, is a member of the America's Policy Group, which is involved with a lot of this. And I'm hoping that through the America's Policy Group, we can say, please find some way for us as citizens to be able to write, to be able to go and make presentations. There is a protest that Juan is speaking at on May 3rd in front of the Royal York Hotel. Shareholders meeting, and he hopes to actually speak at the shareholders meeting. And we hope to send representative to that meeting with our shares, but unfortunately they closed the shares purchase on March 13th. And we thought it was only a month beforehand. Well, we're learning that it was much earlier than we expected. So I hope that's some of the answer to the question of what we have been doing, and that we're just really beginning this process.
Are there any more questions for Juan?
Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit more about some of the effects that have already happened kind of in your community and things you think will happen as the mine grows bigger? We saw some new pictures kind of in the movie.
Okay. Just so everybody hears that question, he's asking about what effects have already happened in Sipa Kappa and things that he's already seen and experienced.
La pregunta es que quiere si puede hablar sobre los efectos que ya existen en la comunidad y las cosas que ya están viendo que han cambiado desde la llegada de la empresa.
Efectos así que ya se están viviendo, hay una serie de cosas. Más que todo ahorita son problemas de tipo social. No podemos decir que el agua ya se contaminó, porque la empresa está empezando a trabajar. Y enfermedades que estén relacionadas con la contaminación del agua tampoco se están viendo actualmente. Pues, uh-huh. Sí, te pido algo.
The effects that we're already living are more in a social aspect, because right now we can't say the water is already contaminated because they've just started to work, and it's just beginning.
El cambio del clima sí ya se percibe. El clima del lugar era más fresco. Actualmente con la inmensa tala de árboles que se ha hecho y la remoción de enormes cantidades de tierra, ya está produciendo un efecto en ese sentido.
One specific effect is the change in the climate already that they're feeling or that they're perceiving. It's colder in part because of all, or it's fresher is the word, but because of all the trees that have been cut down that used to exist there. That's one of the things.
La inseguridad existe ahorita en Zipacapa y sus alrededores, un clima de inseguridad. Han habido, no sé si ustedes se han enterado por los medios o de alguna forma, del asesinato de un compañero nuestro por la seguridad de la empresa, y han habido amenazas de muerte, demandas. Muchos de nosotros y compañeros nuestros han sido demandados en los tribunales. Entonces hay un clima de inseguridad, de represión, que la gente no se anima a decir lo que siente, porque sabe que en cualquier momento le puedes, si no le sucede algo físicamente, pero puede enfrentar alguna cuestión legal en cualquier momento.
Another thing is the insecurity that exists within Tsipa Kappa and the areas surrounding it, or surrounding it. I don't know if you have all heard through the media or through other sources, but specifically one friend of ours was killed by the security of the mining company. There have been death threats against many of the people who are working around this issue. And specifically, there's been the Mambas?
Laying charges against.
Yeah, they're laying charges and they're pressing charges or putting out arrest warrants for many of the people involved. So there's a climate of insecurity and repression, and specifically that the Henti, the people aren't always so eager to say something or to speak up, because even though maybe something physically might not happen to them, there's also the legal repression that is happening.
You've been listening to a presentation from Juan Tima, an indigenous community leader from the town of Tsipa Kappa, Guatemala, where residents are resisting the exploration of an open-pit gold mine operated by Canadian mining company Glamis Gold. Tima was speaking in Halifax, Nova Scotia, as part of a speaking tour organized by the Maritimes Guatemala Breaking the Silence Network. For more information about the effects of Canadian mining corporations in Guatemala and elsewhere, visit www.arsn.ca or email arsn@arsn.ca.
'27, back in the Maritimes, young Louis worked as pit boy down in Minto mines. With miners from around the world, he'd sweat to earn his pay. 16 inches, one thin line for a 16-hour day. 16-hour day. His daylight hours were spent below, but then to end the day, he'd rosin up his bow. With his buddies he would play. The bottle shared between them, they'd fiddle all night alone. Back below at 6 a.m. their hearts now full of song. Their hearts now full of song. He worked that thin line for 40 years. They said they'd shut her down, so he packed it up and he headed west for some Rocky Mountain town. And there he worked and shared his music with friends made in the mines. But Canmore wasn't right for him, neither was the time. Neither was the time. Louis Mador, won't you play me one more song? It's getting kind of late and I must be moving on. Make that fiddle ring as you draw across that bow, and I'll still hear your music when your time has come to go. Your time has come to go. He gave it 7 years out west. It wasn't quite the same. Those boys back home in Minto, they'd been calling out his name. Those coal mines were his life by day. He'd fiddle all night alone. With his bottle by his side, he'd tell tales. He'd play songs. Boy, would he play songs. Then one night outside a bar, he got into a fight. The cops say they've got no idea who threw that punch that night. But Louis took a bad one, sent him to the ground. Now Louis rests where he lived in life, and his family is gathered round. His family's gathered around. Louis be moving on. You made that fiddle ring as you drew across that bow. Now I still hear your music, though your time has come to go. Be moving on. Made that fiddle ring as you drew across that bow. Now I still hear your music, though your time has come to go.